As more organizations outsource aspects of their IT operation, more organizations discover the various gotchas of doing so. There are many opportunities to get it wrong. I'm Paul Lancour with PodTech.net. And in this podcast, I speak with Fareed Mousavi, Managing Director at Bearing Point. I started our conversation by asking Fareed, isn't it true that outsourcing technology has been going on for a long time?
Indeed, Paul. If you really think about it, getting dial tone on your phone was probably the most primitive form of outsourcing dating back to modern corporate history, where the phone company basically provided you a service in exchange for a monthly fee. But more recently, in the recent past, and by that I mean inside of the last 10 years, as we were approaching the 21st century, outsourcing started to take more and more the role of a financial engineering play, whereby the assets and in some cases the people of a firm were basically sold in exchange for some leaseback structure. It helped mitigate the highs and the lows of the financial or the business curve, if you will, during lean times. It would minimize the impact on the cash flow. During good times, it would help address growth. But at the end of the day, it was strictly just a balance sheet activity more than anything else, with the hope, of course, that the longer-term benefits in terms of operational efficiency would be coming in. But, of course, we all know that merely materialized, at least surely not initially.
So that's a brief history of IT outsourcing. And as you said, it became much more popular at the end of the last century. And is it true that it still has not quite met the expectations that it held forth, that it's still more or less just a balance sheet item at this time?
Well, I think the fundamental tenet of it being in helping operational efficiency, whether it's financial or on the technology or, side of things, or more importantly, more recently on the business side, I think those fundamental principles is kind of still like the holy grail. Outsourcing itself, the structure of the deals have morphed over time. They're no longer just a pure financial engineering play, the sell and lease back structure. Not just that. They've evolved. They've evolved to start including more than just the commoditized assets and processes. Moving further up the food chain into the business processes, things which are less commoditized, more customized. And, of course, the outsourcing vendors are trying to keep up or, in some cases, actually driving this this evolution further up the food chain, because that's where, frankly, the margins are. And as corporations are becoming more integrated in their operations, specifically within the technology realm, that brings us to where we are today.
So then, having taken a look at that history, what are the IT outsourcing gotchas? What are the lessons that we've learned? What are the do's and don'ts of IT outsourcing?
Yeah, I think the best way to do that, let's start off by saying, we've pretty much heard any major IT journal or a general publication has a common quote these days saying 9 out of 10 outsourcing deals end up becoming defined as a failure in some shape or form. But let's put some substance to that kind of statement. We've analyzed dozens of significant outsourcing engagements in the financial services sector. When I say significant, they usually are multi-year, and the dollar value is measured in billions, not millions or tens of millions. So, these large mega outsourcing deals, the ones that do not succeed, really fail from a number of telltale signs. We've kind of lumped them into five or six categories, and I can just highlight them for you here.
Please.
The first one would be, this is the case where naivety really plays the primary driver. The firm looking to outsource simply assumes that the outsourcing vendor, will fix all existing problems, right? Whether they're doing a technology refresh, where the refresh itself, the rationale for the refresh is not clearly stipulated, or when it comes to technology compatibility, or actually incompatibility more specifically. The key lesson learned here is you fix it first and then you outsource it. Right. If you can't outsource something that's broken. That's the walk-away sign from that particular cluster of reasons why outsourcing engagements fail. The next one is the tremendous desire for wanting immediate transformation. Right. This is where the company, for whatever reason, is on a mandate to change and change quickly, and outsourcing is, for some reason, viewed as a change agent or a change vehicle. Well, there again, you got some issues. The transitioning legacy is never as quick as one would like. The whole vendor and client relationship have different views on transitioning and transitioning methodology. So that's a speed bump, if not a detour, towards immediate transformation. And once again, transformation, you got to have a good governance model in tow. If you have incompatibilities on how you govern the processes and the objectives, well, that's, again, it's going to slow you down. The third area why we feel outsourced engagements suffer or fail is basically going under the false assumption of improved service level agreements. Well, you know, because outsourcing contracts are written on paper and the legal folks chime in with, you know, terms like service level agreements, service level objectives. Well, it's one thing to put them on paper. You'd be surprised how many outsourcing deals get inked without that very famous attachment as part of the deal, kind of like TBD. And, you know, 3 years into the deal, they finally get defined, and yet, let alone trying to figure out how to measure it. But those, there is a false assumption that things will improve when you outsource. And, you know, when you don't have business unit alignment on service levels, when you're not able to monitor the performance, when you can't even define what the appropriate level should be, those are some false expectations. Fourth on the list is simply the assuming that the outsourcing vendor will successfully just run whatever you're asking them to do. You kind of like throw everything over the fence and hope that they're just going to run with it, not requiring much from yourself, given that you've conducted the transaction. Well, businesses evolve, their conditions change, and you do need to monitor what's being done. Maybe take some of it back, maybe throw something more over there, but you can't just assume that everything's going to run smoothly without doing some kind of trust but verify approach. Assuming immediate savings, even though the sell and lease back structure is kind of like a quick win, it's not always that way, because the baseline understanding of what's actually being sold, especially in large financial institutions where we've collected our experience from, things aren't all obviously easily captured in one place. And therefore, not knowing what your baseline is, it's going to be very hard to identify what your savings from that baseline are. And last but not least, it's kind of like a corollary to the earlier five, is, you know, just assuming that you're going to get the same service for less cost. Ironically, a lot of these outsourcing deals, if you look at the total cost of ownership of the contract, the before versus the after picture actually is an uptick in cost. Might be some short-term relief in the beginning to keep the CFO happy, but in the long term, the shareholder ends up paying a bigger price. So that's kind of like a gauntlet of gotchas that we've seen over the course, once again, last, I would say, 6 to 8 years of outsourcing deals. I venture to guess that, you know, what's going on in the financial services industry, large global footprints, is probably not that different than what's going on, for example, in a sister vertical like the pharmaceutical industry. It might take on a little different shape or form when you go into manufacturing or some of the other sectors, in the public sector, for example. Some of these might not be as prevalent, but we tend to see these telltale signs almost every large deal we see.
So based on what you've just told me, it sounds like a large part of the IT outsourcing gotchas we're talking about is about managing expectations.
Indeed. Managing expectations, well, basically understanding what you're getting. And this is this is really where, you know, you need to take a real sophisticated, much more sophisticated look at the deal than just some kind of financial play. You know, outsourcing, as I mentioned earlier, has really evolved to something more complex, what we call basically something some people refer to it as outtasking. It's not an exact, I'm not too keen on that term, but it's a nomenclature that's out there, so let's just leverage it here for the purpose of conversation. You know, there are some things that you need to, some criteria that you want to be able to meet, prerequisites, if you will, if you want to outsource or outtask a certain part of your organization, whether it's technology, operations, or even part of the business, if you will. And I'll just run down the list. It's very kind of basic, but sometimes the basic needs to, the obvious needs to be stated. The criteria are as follows. You know, you really don't want to outsource or outtask anything that has any kind of key strategic dependency on what you do as a business. You want to outsource or outtask something which is relatively high degree of standardization, right? Easily understood, easily transitionable, so forth and so on. You'd like to outsource or outtask things that are generally transaction-based. The fewer the interfaces, the better. You obviously want to minimize your financial risks. So if something has financial exposure, you really don't want to, that's either hard to define or above a particular threshold, putting that on the plate for outsourcing or outtasking could take that risk exposure even higher, and you want to keep those off the table. You generally don't want to outsource or outtask things that have high levels of regulatory or legal constraints on them. Especially when you're talking about taking things off premises, out of state, out of country, you know, the regulatory world starts becoming pretty fuzzy, especially in the financial services sector, but also it has a similar parallel in the pharmaceutical as well. And generally, the things that you can define that require a narrow range of skill mixes, are good candidates for outsourcing or outtasking. Something that requires a very broad range of skill mixes is, once again, it becomes hard to manage, hard to quantify, and of course, qualify. So those are kind of like the kind of things you want to keep in the back of your mind as you're looking to, you know, as I said earlier, as you're evolving beyond the financial play, which you should be by now, these are the types of things you should keep in mind going forward.
So given all what you said, this is some pretty scary territory. And if you haven't already scared our listeners off from looking into doing some outsourcing with their IT department, what should someone do to proceed other than securing your services and sitting down and having you consult with them? Where can people go to try and get a handle on what seems like a fairly thorny problem of doing the right thing when outsourcing IT?
Well, first of all, I just want to mention a paradox here. Yes, most of this conversation has been about common sense type things. It shouldn't be new to the listener anything that I have said here. But the paradox lies in, well, how come 9 out of 10 outsourcing deals fail? The fact of the matter is, it's the common sense stuff is the obvious, but it's the execution of the obvious which I think really is the reason why we're in this paradox. Let me state a few tenets here that we advise our clients, and you'll get a feel for what I mean by the obvious versus the execution of the obvious. So when we advise our clients on, you know, key success factors for outsourcing, this is taking the criteria list that I mentioned earlier one step further. You know, you want to institute a trust but verify model. Right. Well, you know, that's once again easier said than done. Instituting that, getting that level of engagement and buy-in is very important. You want to build an accurate baseline. With the way corporate data is sitting out there right now, not sitting in one clean place, it's very difficult to do. A lot of people underestimate how long it takes to build an accurate baseline. But having one is a key prerequisite to a successful outsourcing structure. Third is having really a systematic approach to operations during the transition. A lot of deals are well written on paper, well intended, and so forth, but they fail on the transition. And having dealing with the operations and taking a systematic approach on it, both from your end as a corporation, but on the outsourcing end, getting those aligned is often overlooked. Actively engaging the stakeholders through rigorous communications. Once again, obvious. You got to communicate. You got to have the stakeholders at the table. But in the process to actively do so, people lose interest, people transition out of their jobs, stakeholders change. The CXOs start looking at this in somewhat of a fuzzy context. That's another, and that obviously leads to interpretation or misinterpretation of how successful the project is. Having an alternate plan. Guess what? Outsourcers, every now and then, their business model doesn't succeed or is not as successful as you would like or sure as they would like. Having a backup plan, you'd be amazed at how large deals sometimes fall short of having a backup plan of any meaningful substance. Validating the outsourcing business case. Sometimes the outsourcer puts in on the table a deal that is just too good to be true, and it kind of puts the enterprise off guard, just being dangled with the carrot of a very, very low financial package, very well-received financial package, but there's when something is too good to be sounds too good to be true, it generally is. So the list kind of goes on, but as I was going through this, you know, there's stating the obvious and executing the obvious are two different things that both have to be taken into account together. One other thing I'd like to point the audience to is, you know, there is a wealth of research that's been done. And by research, I don't mean just the academic research. I'm talking about stuff that's been, yes, it might have started off in academia, but it's been actually implemented. There's quite a bit of material out there for the public to review. You know, there's the Outsourcing Institute. There's one particular academic institution which we're fond of because of just the caliber of the work that comes from that organization. It's Carnegie Mellon's what they call enterprise sourcing capability model. This is something that they've evolved, and this is turning the tables a little bit. This is almost like if you were an outsourcer, what criteria must you meet? It's almost like a certification, if you will, a guidebook on how an outsourcer should behave so that it can, in turn, better service its clients. And these are the types of things that it's quite evolved. This has been going on for a number of years. And the enterprises that are considering outsourcing are well advised to kind of look over the fence a little bit and see what's going on the outsourcer side, because, after all, they're being asked to partner, if you will, in their business operations. Hopefully that's been a rounded out summary on what to do going forward.
No, I think that's very rich, and our listeners will really get a lot out of that. And I appreciate you taking the time out and sharing some of that with us, Fareed.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Fareed Mousavi is Managing Director at Bearing Point.